Interesting day. We are dealing with, Super Wednesday, with by-elections take place across the country. The first following the massive lockdown that the country has had. And we wish the South African Democratic Project well on this day and hope that South Africans will go out, exercise their right to vote in all the areas where by-elections are taking place. And with the hope that they will be safe, still in the middle of the pandemic, and hope that they will exercise all the necessary protocols for their safety and protection. And so we wish them all well, and I'm sure that when we are done here, members will be going out of deployment as well. And for being here this morning, noting that Parliament has not given us a day off today, but we will not detain you too long, and we will go out and also participate. But I think all in all, from our side, the group, we wish South Africans participating in these by-elections well, and we hope that they'll be free and fair and free from fear. On that note, colleagues, good morning and welcome to our meeting with the Anti-Corruption Task Team, which, of course, we had indicated that we would want to interact with them following our own concerns here about their functionality, effectiveness and efficiency, following observations on our part and admissions on their part that they've not been meeting as they should. And so we need to tie down on this and to advise General Libia and his colleagues in the anti-corruption task team that we have taken a resolution about the ACTT, which I'm sure will be going to the floor of the House before we rise. So that being the case, we are moving from a basis which says on our side, we expect the ACTT to be fully functional for the pooling and sharing of resources, skills, knowledge and expertise in the very serious fight against the pandemic of corruption, which has gripped South Africa and continues to eat away at the dreams, hopes and aspirations of South Africans of a better life in dignity and service delivery. Every cent stolen from the public purse, every cent squandered from the public purse has got a direct impact on the sustainable livelihoods of our people. And we rely and count on the law enforcement agencies to be our line of defense and to ensure that those who are stealing and squandering and are corrupt are brought to book, and to do so without fear or favor and without any prejudice. And so that is why we are here this morning, colleagues, to get a briefing from the ACTT on where things are, how things are going, then we will be able to field questions. So what I'll do, colleagues, is would Ben please enter the apologies of members into the record, and then, colleagues, we will hand over to General Libia, and he will then indicate to us and introduce his team, or rather the heads of the institutions or representatives of the institutions here will introduce themselves and advise us of their presence. And then General Libia, you will then take the floor make your presentation. This is one aspect of the fight against corruption we take very, very seriously. And so we hope that we'll be able to take us into confidence today and give us the necessary assurance that it's all hands on deck and that things are moving as they should. So, General, over to you and your colleagues, and if they may please introduce themselves. And then, colleagues, we will go to questions, and please indicate in the family group if you would like to speak. And to then, of course, indicate that, as I said earlier, we are on Parliament's platforms this morning. And so please have your camera on. And if you are not on, please can you switch off your mic. So to the ACTT, good morning, welcome, and over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am accompanied by members of the Anti-Corruption Task Team, as the invitation has so directed. And then in the center where I'm sitting with the part of the Secretariat, that is myself, the national head of the DPCI, who is the chairperson of the ACTT. I'm sitting with the deputy national head of the directorate, as well as the acting divisional commissioner in the directorate, that is Lieutenant General Musigidi, as well as Major General Musibi. I also have got the support staff, Brigadier Suraj Bali, as well as the Secretariat, Colonel Nkeuse, and the assistant. This is the people that are sitting at the directorate's office. But in the midst, in the various centers, are members of the ACTT, but I will allow, as the chairperson have directed, that they introduce themselves, then I will take the floor for the presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you, General. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. This is Advocate Batoy. I'm here on this platform together with Advocate de Kock, who is the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions in charge of the National Prosecuting Service, as well as Advocate Omar Rabaji, who is the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions in charge of the Asset Forfeiture Unit. Thank you, Chair. And may I, Chair, before we proceed, Advocate Rabaji and Advocate Tukok, if there are any members of your team present, maybe if you could introduce them, please.
No, that's fine, Advocate. No problem.
Advocate Rabaji, is there any member of your team present that you'd like to introduce?
Good morning, Chairperson, and thank you, NDPP. I'm sitting here with my special director, head of operations, Advocate Priya Beseswa at VGM Building. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Advocate Rabaji. Advocate de Kock.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Good morning to the members of the committee and chairperson. I am with the acting special director for the Special Commercial Crimes Unit of the MPA, Advocate Lebo Baloy.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Chair.
The SIU.
Good morning. Thank you, General. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Andy Mutivi. I'm the head of the Special Investigating Unit. I'm accompanied by my colleague, Mr. Leonard Lekgetho, who is the Chief National Investigating Officer, and also by my colleague, Dumiseni Ngumalo, who is the Senior Risk Manager. Is driving the Vulnerable Sector Program 4 of the ACTT. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members.
The FIC. The NICO. Other members of the ACTT that I haven't mentioned that are present, may you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. This is Ndandazo Sifolo. I represent the Coordinator for Intelligence. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. This is Advocate Kanile, the Director of the FIC. With me, it's Dr. Masia Batu, who is the head of monitoring and analysis, and who is also responsible really for overseeing the daily activities there in the fusion center that is located in the FIC. Dr. Masia Batu, you can introduce yourself.
No, thanks, Director and Chair. Yeah, indeed, it's Dr. Masia Batu. Thanks.
Honorable Chairperson, I take it that those are the members of the ACTT that have managed to link. Others, I'm not seeing them, but all of them have been invited. I'm not sure if it might be the struggle to link, but all of them have been invited and are expected to be in. Chairperson, if we may then...
General, one second. Sorry about this. I think before we proceed, then
can you call me
round three? Mr. Mkongo, please mute your mic. General, I would request that you advise us who is not here, so that we adopt a Zulagahle approach on this matter.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Part of the personnel that are supposed to be present in this meeting is the representatives from the South African Police Service. It seems that I'm not having a representative from the SAPS, unless they are struggling to link. I also do not have a representative from the SARS, unless they are also struggling to link. I'm expecting the representative from the National Treasury. I'm not seeing a representative. We are supposed to have a representative from the DPSA. I haven't seen a representative. We are to have a representative from the DPME. We are supposed to have a representative from State Security Agency. We are supposed to have a representative from COPTA. We are supposed to have a representative from the Department of Communication, GCIS. We are supposed to have a representative from the IPED. We are supposed to have a representative from the Public Service Commission. We are supposed to have a representative from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Those, Chairperson, are the entities that are supposed to be represented, that I have not heard them confirming their presence online.
Well, I think that's precisely, General, is why we are here. Fundamentally, the concern of this committee has been whether the ACTT is meeting, and whether it is effective, functional, and
Chair, I'm sorry, but we're struggling to hear you.
Yeah.
The attorney is not a problem that we have. Am I audible now?
We have been missing you, Chairperson. I think that you are now audible.
Okay. No, what I'm saying, generally, is that this is fundamentally the problem we have. And that's why we are here today. A majority of your members are absent. And what is common cause now is that it's clear that the agencies and the states which have been consistent in either appearing before this committee or responding positively to this committee is yourself, the NDPP, and the head of the SIU. I don't think it's acceptable to have such a long list of entities and departments which are supposed to be here and are not here, given the gravity of the situation, which is underscored by a concern that we have had. Of course, I know that I'm probably preaching to the converted here, which is the buck in one way or the other stops with you and so forth. Is concerned, and I think we would like, I think colleagues, can you just note the particular peculiarity, and then we will come back to it when we make recommendations further and look at this matter. So I think let's hand over to you, General, to make your presentation.
Honorable Chair.
Further, but I think that.
All right. Honorable Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, you are quite audible. You may proceed.
All right. No, thanks, Chair. I won't be able to switch on my video because I'm on the ground conducting by-elections, but I'm connected to the meeting. I am very much concerned, Chairperson, with the number of apologies. In fact, it is not apologies. We were expecting to be given apologies, but we are told about departments that are missing in action, whether they are struggling to connect with something else. But what we know for a fact is that they have been invited and they have confirmed to attend the meeting. So the list that was read to us is not the list of apologies. I would therefore propose that we request the admin staff to make a follow-up and find out where are these agencies that ought to have been locked in by 9:30. Because these are very critical agencies, specifically when you talk about SEBS, when you talk about COCTA is not here, you refer to Treasury and SARS. So it appears as if more than 60% of the composition of the committee is not here. So the admin must make a follow-up and find out where are they. Even us, like me as we speak, Chair, I'm on the ground in the by-election, but I've made an effort to connect virtually using my gadget, which is a cell phone, and I've found a suitable place so that I can engage on the meeting. We can't continue without knowing whether these people have forwarded apologies or they've deliberately decided that they're not going to attend. If at least we know the situation, that will give us comfort. We can't continue with the meeting of members of a task team who are not adhering or heeding the call in terms of their deployment.
All right, let's do this because the head of the ACTT is here. Hey, this thing is a tongue twister. I might as well call it FT, is here. Whilst we'll do this, as the meeting is in progress, our admin, along with the secretariat of the ACTT, will be checking as to where these members are, and then hand over to General Libya to make a presentation, and then we will take it from there. So, General, over to you. Yes, Babu Swamy.
Before that, I think in appreciation of the consistency of those members who have appeared and continuously do appear when invited by the committee who are now forming part of this meeting from these various agencies. I think we must appreciate that. And secondly, with that appreciation, we, from my side, I would want to check with them that the report they are going to table here, how do they take it? Will they take it as the report of the ACTT or as the report of those agencies who are present in terms of giving us the picture of what is taking place in terms of anti-corruption? If yes, depending on the consistency and availability of those members who are not seen here today as part of this meeting, in terms of constituting this kind of a report, one would have a serious problem if we would take a report as the report fully agreed to by the members of the ACTT. So I would love, even before the general continues, if you could clarify that point.
Right, General, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We have already directed the Secretariat to follow up with the members of the committee what could be the problem that they are not linked on the online. So we are doing that one. With regards to the report that we are presenting, we have compiled this report by the participant in the ACTT, focusing on the questions that have been raised. The questions that were raised are not covering every single aspect of the activities in the ACTT, but we have focused based on what has been requested. So it is the report of the ACTT as a whole. That is said to respond to the question that has been raised by the Honorable Somyo. I'm now going to go into the presentation. After the presentation, the National Director of Public Prosecution will be making additional comments, and then we will allow all of the participants to assist in responding to the questions that may arise after the presentation. I'm now going to move into the presentation. The covering slide is just an indication that it is the presentation by the anti-corruption task team of the JCPS, which is dealing with cases referred to the ACTT by the various entities. I think that the system is just we're struggling a little bit. All right. Moving to the introduction, the scope of the presentation is that we are going to be touching on the introduction and the background. Then we will come to the challenges and the constraints that were identified during the period 2010-2019. We will then talk to the progress and development since August 2019. Then we will come to the cases referred to the anti-corruption task team, the cases that are under investigation, the cases that have been finalized, and the prosecution or that has been declined, or cases that have been withdrawn. Then we will come to the cases referred to the Fusion Center that relates to COVID-19 interventions. Then we will talk to the discussion on conviction and sentencing as a strategic levers, then we will make a concluding remarks. The Executive Committee of the Anti-Corruption Task Team briefed the SCOPA in 2019, August the 20th. During the briefing, extensive information was presented covering the historic development, the composition, the mandate, the functioning, the progress made, and the constraints of the anti-corruption task team. Details were also provided on the following: the operational mechanisms, the programs, including the breakdown of the policy, training, and the operational intervention. We also talked about the progress report for the period of 2014 to 2019. Since the August 2019, in specific focus engagement with the SCOPA, the ACTT also responded to briefed the SCOPA on the development of an operational mechanism specifically to deal with the corruption cases as a result of development during the national state of disaster that is affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. There were challenges and constraints that we have highlighted that during that briefing, SCOPA was briefed in detail on the following issues: the absence of statutory mandate or overarching legislation governing its establishment or functioning, and the formalized operational framework. We also talked about the overarching coordination, accountability at higher levels, and the multiplicity of corruption fighting structures. We also talked about insufficient allocation of resources and the capacity constraints in departments, drawn out processes, that is the investigation and the prosecution and the full court roles. We also talked about the operational results achieved that were not reflecting on the provisions in the legislation. Various subcommittees and the teams within the anti-corruption task teams are working on crucial aspects for improvement, including the new case selection criteria that has already been adopted, the forensic capacity, the training capacity within the ACTT law enforcement agencies, case management, prioritization and operational measures, and the additional budget and staff that have created. A project was launched in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for the establishment of additional 5 specialized courts to address serious commercial and economic crimes, including corruption. The establishment of the special tribunal to adjudicate upon civil matters emanating from investigation by the special investigating unit. The special investigating unit has initiated intersectoral forums for health and the local government sectors. And the health sector anti-corruption forum was launched by the state president in October 2019, and the local government anti-corruption forum was launched in October 2020. In terms of the prevention, there is still an urgent need for improved integrity management through vetting and lifestyle audits. The development of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy is taking place. The strategy and development process was initiated in 2015 by the Anti-Corruption Interministerial Committee in line with the 2014-2019 medium-term strategic framework and was facilitated by the JCPS cluster under the leadership of the Anti-Corruption Task Team. The process was driven by an interdepartmental National Anti-Corruption Strategy Steering Committee and supported by the Governance Support Program. The National Anti-Corruption Strategy document were developed through a long, thoroughly consulted and transparent process in collaboration with all of the sectors of South African society based on international best practice. The approval process started in August 2020, and the Cabinet Lekoza in October 2020 has endorsed the submission of the draft National Anti-Corruption Strategy for final approval. The processing of the Cabinet Memorandum is underway for final approval by Cabinet. I am now coming to the cases that were referred to the Anti-Corruption Task Team, which is the work that is the current focus of the presentation. The cases under investigation, coordination of investigation, prosecution, and recovery of assets on prioritized cases is done through the Anti-Corruption Task Team. This reflected on the priority case register, which reflects 223 prioritized cases. This includes the 13 foreign bribery matters. In the table, it is reflected the breakdown of those 223 cases. Starting with the first one is cases pending investigation by the DPCI. There are 69 of these matters that are still currently under investigation. There are 9 matters that are currently considering a pending decision by the National Prosecuting Authority as to whether there is a decision to prosecute or otherwise. There are cases, 42 cases that are currently on trial at the various courts. With regard to the matters that prosecution has been declined, that is where there is a nolle prosequi decision, are 15 matters with various reasons. There are cases that were withdrawn, some of which are provisionally withdrawn. This constitutes 26 of these matters. Cases that have been finalized at court, inclusive of acquittal and conviction, are 62. So that makes 223 matters that are listed on the priority case list of the Anti-Corruption Task Team. Challenges and delays in fast-tracking cases are experienced as a result of a limited capacity that we have highlighted in the past, that is in the areas of forensic, investigative, and prosecutorial teams. A reliance on external forensic accountants and outdated methodologies. These are the areas that we are currently working on to deal with those challenges. We have got details of this list, but they are not included here. It helps us as operational managers to ensure that each and every case is accounted for. Coming to the breakdown of the cases that have been referred with regard to the focus area where these cases come from, the referral, the cases that are with the ACTT, where do they come from? There are more than 32 departments or entities with various cases. These are the cases where there is more than five cases, at least five or more. So the other departments or entities that have got less than five cases referred, we haven't listed them in this slide, but they are listed in the greater list of cases. As it can be seen here, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, most of the cases emanate from the municipalities. In this regard, there are 28 cases that were referred that emanate from the municipalities. Second to that are cases that come from the Department of Public Works. That is 21 of these matters come from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. 14 matters have been referred from the Department of Health. 12 matters have been referred from the Department of Education. 9 matters are emanating from the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs. From the Department of Transport, 8 matters have been referred. And from the Department of Human Settlement, 6 matters have been referred. The same number applies to the South African Revenue Service, as well as the South African Police Service. Those are 6 each. And then the 5 come from SASA. These are the a list of cases that are 5 or more. From the current list of the cases under investigation, those 223 that I have referred to, this comprise of 249 different projects. So this means that in one case, there may be legs that actually make it more than the 223 that has been listed. One case may have more than one leg, which is why you'll see, Honorable Chairperson and members, that in terms of projects, it will be 249. Some of the cases, as I have said, are multifaceted and have several legs with varying status. You may find that one leg has already reached a prosecution status, while another leg may have been declined, whereas other legs may still be under investigation. I have made a pie chart that lists these cases just in short. It can be seen here that the majority of the cases that is 69 are still under investigation. That is the one that is reflected in blue. That constitute 31% of these cases. It is followed by matters that have been finalized, which is 62 in number. That is, it constitutes 28% of the matters. Then the third one will be the matters on the court roll. That is 42 matters are serving on the court rolls. That constitute 19%. Then it will be followed by the matters that have been withdrawn, which is 12%. That is the 26 in number that I have mentioned. Then comes the matters that have been declined for prosecution. That is 15, which constitute 7%. The last one is the matters that are pending decision by the National Prosecuting Authority, which are 9 cases that constitute 4%. This is a pie chart reflecting the cases that are registered at the anti-corruption task team priority list. I now want to deal with the cases referred to the APTT, which have been finalized. Those are 77 matters since inception. As we have indicated, of the 223 cases, 87 matters, inclusive of the legs and the projects, have been finalized with verdicts. With regard to the results of the trials, 155 persons, inclusive of juristic persons, as well as companies, that is a natural persons and juristic persons, is 155 that have been convicted in the matters that we have referred to as finalized. So out of those 77 matters, 155 persons have been convicted. Out of these 155 convictions and sentences, 8 matters were finalized where a plea and sentence agreement were entered into. From these 9 were acquittal. That is 9 cases that were acquittal out of this 87. So the pie chart that is reflected below is an indication of the figures that I have referred to, where it shows the bigger portion being the one that have got conviction and sentence on the chart, and then the blue one, which is 8, is reflecting the plea and sentence agreement, whereas the acquittal is 9. That is the pie chart, and this is actually translated into the conviction rate. It's 89.8%. And then when we look at the conviction rate relating to persons, it actually translates into 91.2%. But normally the measurement is always focused on the case numbers. We just wanted to indicate that while the case numbers may reflect a lower number, the individuals that have been convicted in the matters are more than the case numbers, as one case may have more than one accused person. The next slide, that it just shows in a different format that between 2010 and 2011 and 2013 and 2014, there were 9 cases that were finalized. So out of that 77, during those years, it was 9 cases that were finalized. But from 2015 financial year to date, there are 68 cases that were finalized. That make a total of the figure that we have indicated above as 77. So it can be seen in terms of the chart, the breakdown from 2014 up to current, that 16 were finalized in 2014, 2015, 2016 were 9, followed by 2016, 2017 that were 15, and then 2017, 2018, 14, and then 2018, 2019, 10, and 3 in 2019, 2020, and then the current is 1. So that is the current breakdown. Now I move to the cases again referred that has been finalized. These 8 cases refer to the plea and the sentence. We just quoted 2 of those where the assets for feature were done. I have indicated the 2 cases which have got priority listed as 119 and 174. At the extreme left is the date on which the conclusion were made as requested by the committee, which happened in 2015 and 2016 respectively. The amounts that were involved is reflected in the third column, that is 1,377,000, and then also 2 million, as well as the preservation order for the 5 million that is reflected below. So that amount has been paid to the CARA account. So there has not been an appeal with regard to the sentences that were meted out by the courts. I'm now going over to the cases that were withdrawn, that were referred to the ACTT. During the period 2013 to 2019, 17 cases from the priority list were withdrawn. There are various reasons for these withdrawals, and we have put them in a form of pie chart with explanatory notes on the right-hand side. It can be seen that the majority of the cases, which is 11, were withdrawn because there was no prospect of successful prosecution. Two of these are cases where the main suspects passed on. And the rest of the cases is where a key witness were not traced, where the accused was not fit to stand trial according to the psychiatric report, and where the docket was handed over to the other entity for further consideration. And in the last one is where the accused person suffered a severe stroke such that the matter could not be taken any further. A further 9 cases were provisionally withdrawn, and the investigation in these matters are still proceeding in order to obtain whatever evidence allow the enrollment of final decision on the matter. I'm now coming over to the cases that are handled at the Fusion Center, which is an entity of the Anti-Corruption Task Team. As of the 18th of May 2020, we established the operational hub that is in the Fusion Center of the Financial Intelligence Center to focus on the incident of corruption and maladministration related to COVID-19 relief funds as they are reported and detected. Since the establishment of this arrangement, 220 matters were enrolled on the Fusion Center hub. 9 of these are already criminal cases that are at court with 24 accused persons. These matters are on the roll. We have made a table of a breakdown of this 220 matters. In the first row are the 9 cases that we say are matters at court with 24 accused persons. Below are the matters that are still under investigation. Of this, we have got 104 incidences that have not been matured into either case docket or finalized. We have got 87 case dockets that are under investigation. This make a total of 191. That is, the majority of matters are still under investigation. There are also 20 matters that have been finalized. 17 of these are incidents, while 3 of these are cases. So it means that 121 incidents and 99 cases make that 220 matters. The 20 matters that have already been finalized, in 17 instances, matter were closed due to the allegation emerging from unsubstantiated media reports where insufficient grounds existed to continue with the investigation. So those were inquiries that were unfounded. In 3 instances, criminal cases were opened, but the prosecution declined to prosecute on these matters, and the cases were closed. The details we do have, which assist in management of these matters. I'm now coming over to the conviction and sentencing as strategic lever. This is a question that was raised by the honorable members of the committee to reflect on this aspect. We agree that effective sentencing is internationally recognized as being a deterrent. Although some already relatively good sentences have been achieved and delivered, most cases involve either partly or wholly suspended sentence, which is a concern. We just, honorable chairperson and members, reflected on 2 examples or on some of the good sentences among the cases that shall have been finalized. We did not put many, as this was not a question that was asked, but it's just a matter of reflecting that it's not only matters that are finalized with the lenient sentences that have actually are forming part of the matters finalized in court. In the first matter, as it can be seen, the priority case number 157, it involved the sentence where 9 million rand was involved. Criminal, the first accused, was convicted on 76 counts. And when one looked at the nature of the sentences, a total of 541 years imprisonment were meted out. Effectively, as this will run concurrently, 50 years imprisonment had to be served by accused number 1. Accused number 2, who was convicted on 15 counts, was sentenced to a collective of 153 years imprisonment. As they run concurrently, he has to effectively serve 28 years imprisonment. When it comes to accused number 3, who was convicted on 6 counts, he has to serve 86 years of imprisonment. But because they run concurrently, he shall effectively serve 28 years of imprisonment. The next one, that was a priority case number 42, which was finalized in 2016. With regard to the sentence, the accused was, in various counts, given several sentences, as it can be seen that in count 8 of corruption, there were 15 years imprisonment. Count 16, 15 years. Count 34, for money laundering, 12 years. And then count 35, again 12 years. Sentences in all counts to run concurrently, which means that the accused is to serve an effective 15 years imprisonment. These are some of the sentences. And then when it comes to fine, one can also see that in count 8, there was also 150,000 rand fine. Coming to the, continuing with the conviction and sentencing aspect, the ACTT has not specifically discussed the conviction and sentencing as the strategic levers in the fight against corruption as asked by the Honorable Committee members. The National Development Plan of 2020 indicates that corruption must be fought on three levels, namely deterrence, prevention, and education. The draft National Anti-Corruption Strategy promotes the strengthening of anti-corruption agencies as effective law enforcement, along with the removal of benefits that will act as deterrents to corruption, improved enforcement of laws and policies, and the imposition of sanctions, whether criminal or otherwise, against those involved in corruption will lead to increased public confidence and will significantly enhance the deterrent effects of the laws and policies that are in place. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is conducting a review of the Criminal Procedure Act through the South African Law Reform Commission. The object of this project is to address the outdated provisions of legislation and address measures to strengthen efficiency and effectiveness of the criminal justice system. Broadly, sentencing is at the core of redress to victims of crime and signals the seriousness with which the state treats serious crimes. This will form part of the broad review of the legislation. The Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act and the Prevention of Organized Crime Act are also undergoing a review within the Department of Justice and Criminal and Constitutional Development. The issue of review of penal provisions was discussed at the JCPS level and incorporated into the economic reconstruction and recovery strategy. Coming to the concluding remarks, the collective requires key skills and the processes underway to secure additional capacity, such as additional investigators at the Directorate of Priority Crime Investigation. I must say that we have already acquired more than 150 this month alone. Additional funding has been provided for the Special Commercial Crime Unit contract appointment, and the National Prosecuting Authority is in the process of filling vacancies. Forensic audit and accounting capacity is also the additional capacity that we are focusing on. Recent arrests receiving media attention further demonstrate that cases are getting attention and that there is a strategy to ensure additional enrollment of cases by the end of this year. In the medium term, there is also a strategy to ensure enrollment of a number of complex matters. The National Anti-Corruption Strategy will clarify some of the aspects, including the issue of single agency to fight corruption. As I've indicated, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the National Director of Public Prosecution will make comments before we give it back to the committee for further process. Advocate Batoy. Honorable Chairperson, I'm not sure if the committee is able to hear us.
Yes, the advocate can proceed.
All right, Advocate Batoy.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I had muted. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, honourable colleagues, and thank you, General Abia, for giving me the opportunity as the co-chair of the ACTT to make some general remarks. General Abia has presented in accordance with the requests of Europa, and as well as, you know, look, dealing with the work of the ACTT in general. Chair, what I'd like to add is that we have to recognise that, you know, given all of the statistics, notwithstanding these statistics, the reality is that the ACTT, insofar as investigating and prosecuting serious complex corruption cases over the past years, failed. And that is, we have to acknowledge that. And what happened in the various law enforcement institutions tasked with doing this has left a mammoth task to try to put together the building blocks and to capacitate and skill the various entities that are tasked with the huge demands as far as fighting corruption is concerned, as well as holding people accountable, as well as bringing back the money. And so, I think we have to see it in that context. There's a lot that's happening now, as the general has laid out. And there are plans in the ACTT to look at skills across the value chain. You know, what are the skills that we need? What are the resources that we need? The forensic capacity that the general talked about, we cannot overestimate the importance of this, in addition to a whole range of other skills, which we simply do not have sufficient of at the moment. And so I think there has to be a recognition that in the past, just over a year, when a lot of building blocks are being put in place, we also did, and this is not meant to be an excuse, we also did have to contend with the lockdown and during the pandemic. But notwithstanding that, there has been a lot of work that has been done behind the scenes with regard to ensure that we can deliver. The ACTT is the key, corruption fighting entity, but it really is a collaborative entity where colleagues basically sit together in a room and try to collaborate the best we can within the context of our individual mandates. And so it is a very strong collaborative model, and it depends on very strong collaboration between the various stakeholders. And there's no collaboration framework, but it depends on, and therefore, you know, if you don't have that, things could be, you know, you could achieve, or things might be more challenging. But the good thing is that there is a sufficient degree of collaboration in the ACTT that we are able to bring some cases to court, notwithstanding challenges that we are still facing. And so support from SCOPA, I mean, we acknowledge that, you know, we are accountable to SCOPA, and that is why we respect the committee, and we are here to account for what we're doing, and also to the people of the country. But we also would like guidance and support and assistance from SCOPA, because there is still a huge mountain to climb, and we're nowhere near sufficient resources to do what we have to do. And given that there may be additional cuts in budgets as a result of the pandemic, we urge that we have support across the board, and that is the key, also the key entities that are in this meeting today, including the Hawks, SIU, NPA, Financial Intelligence Center. I think it's really important that all of these entities, as well as others that are part of the ACTT, are properly skilled and capacitated. And Chair, there's just one other thing I would like to say, is that the issue of the plea and sentences that the general talked about. In the past years, one of the challenges and concerns, certainly of the NPA when I took over as well, was the fact that, as the general said, a number of cases were suspended sentences. And that is also reflective of the fact that, you know, the most serious cases were not being dealt with, or you know, the sentences were inappropriate. If we want to send a strong message, if we want to be a deterrent, we want sentences, convictions and sentences to be a strong deterrent, then the sentences must match this, together with asset forfeiture. We have, the measures that were in place were driving incorrect behaviors in terms of numbers of cases finalized, conviction rates. We are moving away from that and more looking at impact and encouraging certainly the prioritization of the cases that is happening in the ACTT will be reflective of the fact that the high impact cases are certainly being prioritized, and we are trying to resource them as well as a collective to ensure that we can make the impact that we would like to see and the country would like us to see. And Chair, the final point I would like to say, and maybe this does touch on the capacity, investment in fighting corruption is an investment in the country, Chair. And we must commit to a return investment, because if we're able to prosecute the right cases, if we're able to investigate them properly, prosecute them, and then show, it will increase confidence in law enforcement, confidence in the system, confidence in the country. It will increase, it will have a ripple effect in terms of investor confidence, building the economy, and therefore allowing us to actually bring back the money to redevelop and put the money where it matters in terms of sustainable development in this country. And in the asset forfeiture part, investment in asset forfeiture means we can bring back the money and therefore also impact the economy. And the final point I'd like to make, Chair, is that the General had indicated the issue of the single entity, whatever it's going to be, wherever it's going to be, however it's going to be conceptualized, it's really important that there's finality on that, so that there's still the lack of certainty, the lack of certainty is it's not stopping us from certainly forging ahead as the ACTT to do what we can, but the capacitation, etc., is hugely important. So any support in that regard will be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
All right, thank you very much, MPPP. Generally, if we hand over to the HOU of the SIU, and then we can go to questions.
Advocate Mutibi.
I wonder if you can see me. Hello?
Yes, we can. So you may proceed.
Okay.
We can see you.
Okay, no thanks. No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, General, and thank you, NDPP. Honorable Chair and members, mine is really just to reemphasize the issue around the capacity that we're really trying our best with what we have, but across all the members of the ACTT, I mean, in particular, NPA, SIU, HOCS, and FIC, I would say, it's really very critical that we get the necessary support to capacitate ourselves appropriately. Chair, without reiterating, there is part of the ACTT work that really deals in the main with the prevention, because I think we've heard the call of the committee that we need to up the game in terms of the prevention side. And I think as we go forward, we will continue to indicate to the committee that we are putting in place measures in line with the National Anti-Corruption Strategy that is we're being finalized. We should be in a position to demonstrate going forward that we are upping the game in terms of the prevention side of the fight against corruption. Thank you very much.
Advocate Kanyile.
Right, General.
Thank you. I'm struggling with my camera here. but I hope the members can hear me. Thank you, Chair. From the side of the FIC, I must say the law enforcement agencies that are sitting here, they do use the FIC generated financial.
You may proceed, ma'am.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, ma'am, you may proceed.
Advocate Kanile.
Advocate Kanile is muted, I think.
Can you hear me, NDPP?
Yes, now we can.
We can hear you now.
Yeah, thank you. I'm saying from the FIC, I can confirm that the law enforcement agencies sitting here, they do use the FIC-generated financial intelligence to investigate and prosecute corruption, as well as forfeit assets that are proceeds of corruption. The biggest challenge, Chair and Honourable Members, is that in the FIC we receive about 5.9 million cash threshold reports, and that's a lot of money. And the assessment that we have done as a country shows that there is lots of cash in the country that we cannot really explain, and we are failing to detect and recover cash proceeds of crime as a country. This has been confirmed by the Financial Action Task Force that came to assess the country last year. So it's very, very important that we all be capacitated in order to be able to generate these reports into actionable intelligence that can be used by law enforcement agencies in fighting corruption. It's also very important that we look at the gaps in our laws so that we can be able to even come up with crimes to say certain individuals, they need to be able to explain really if they are in possession of cash. We see a lot of cash in individuals, which is really suspicious. But there'll be individuals like people who are owning business where you'll be able to understand where the cash is coming from. But you don't want the FIC to be in possession of all this information, but the law enforcement agencies don't have capacity to use this information in fighting crime. We can't be a country that is poor and is struggling, yet cash is just all over and we cannot control it. Even when it comes to borders, the declaration or under declaration, we seem to be failing. So it's very important that we be capacitated, especially in the asset forfeiture space, especially even in the FIC space, and in the Hawks. In the Hawks, when FATF assessed us, I'm sure you're still going to get a report. They indicated that the Hawks also need this capacity to have forensic accountants. I must say in the FIC, we, with all the reports that we are getting, we are able to disseminate about 2,000, almost 3,000 actionable intelligence. But that intelligence really, you see improvement now in its usage, but you need to be able to have forensic accountants in the ID, forensic accountants in the NPA, especially the asset forfeiture, in the Hawks, and even in the FIC, being able to support the financial investigation so that we can be able to recover proceeds. I must say in the FIC, I'm sitting with only two forensic accountants, two data technologists, and 31 analysts with all this information at hand that needs to be analyzed, that needs to be really given to law enforcement so that it's easy for them to really analyze it and convert it into evidence. So the issue of capacity, I think there are places where we can really say we can't, but when it comes to fighting corruption, I don't think we need to be making compromises, but we seem to be talking and we don't really, we don't get a sense that we are being heard. The issue that has been touched by the NDPP to say, with all these multi-agencies fighting corruption, what is it that you are trying to do to ensure that we only have one dedicated component only dealing with these cases? It's also another matter when we need to really reach conclusion. But from our side, we thank you for the support and for hearing us. And I must say the coordination is really improving a lot. And we've got plans really to try and resuscitate our ECCT. Thank you.
All right, General, I'd like to think that we can go to questions unless there's any other further issue you'd like to raise.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Just to indicate that with regard to the concern that was raised, the Secretariat has been able to get some of the officials. There is an apology from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. They are participating in the Portfolio Committee as we speak. And then there is also an apology from the State Security Agency. And then the representative from the DPSA has joined the platform, as well as the representative from the DPME has joined the platform. That is the information that we have received so far. I think that where there is still a need, we can always respond later about those who are not in the meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members.
No, thank you very much, General. No, I note that, but I certainly do not consider those to be apologies. I put it on the record because we had to go fishing for them and the people who consent had seen no need to be here. So I will take them as explanations as to why they are not here. I think that if we set that precedent into motion, we undermine ourselves here in this very room. We note that they're not here with the explanations that they've provided, and I will make a determination moving forward. It remains fundamentally totally unacceptable in the manner in which they have conducted and behaved themselves this morning for the purposes of this meeting. And I think that, as I've said, it goes to the heart of the problems we've had. And I think part of the submissions we'd like is on the meetings that you have had, we'd like the attendance registers of those so that we can be in a position to assess as to whether who are these serial offenders and whether they attend when you call them and don't attend here, or that they just generally don't attend. So that still does not sit well with me. Right, colleagues, may I hand over to you for questions?
Honorable Chairperson.
Honorable Hattero, you may proceed, ma'am.
My apology. I missed out the part about the explanation of those that have apologized. Please bear with me. Like I said, I'm in an era where the network is a challenge. If you can repeat that last part for me.
There's a supposed apology, which I consider to be an explanation from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and State Security Agency. And the representatives from DPME are present, and I did not catch the last one, but DPSA, thank you, General, DPSA, have joined. So the others remain not here. Yeah. All right, Honorable Hadebe, questions? All right, colleagues, questions? May I hand over to you?
Yes, Comrade Chairperson.
All right, Honorable Dex.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. I just have one question that I would like to ask ask here today. My question is, how does the ACCT prioritize cases? I'm asking this question because we are being accused in the public domain of selective prosecutions. So I really would like to know, how do they prioritize cases? I was in a meeting in which we can get a transcript from the meeting last year. We had a joint meeting, SCOPA and finance had a joint meeting, and we can get a transcript when our meetings get recorded, where we discussed the issue of sign-off. And when we inquired from the Hawks why are they not prosecuting the sign-off matter, we were informed by them that the NPA does not want to release certain information to them. And the NPA was in that meeting. And we then asked the NPA, why are you not releasing the information to the Hawks that the Hawks is requiring in order to continue the prosecution? The NPA responds to us, and it's on record. You must go and go look at the transcript. It's on record. The NPA then responded to us by saying, no, they are not planning to go criminally after Steinhoff because they want to protect the investors' investments. They want to protect monopoly capital investment, and that's why they do not want to. They want to do a protection of the thing. They don't want to go for the prosecution. They made it very clear, but the correct words, we can go to transcripts and look at it. And this is the reason why we are getting accused of selective prosecution, because the style of matter is very, 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 very clear. Billions of rands of pensioners' monies has been lost in it in this transaction, and the culprit is out there. It's known. It's been written about it, and they are right there. They're not getting prosecuted. So I want to know what criteria you'll use to prioritize cases, because the time of matter has not been prioritized for prosecution. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Any further questions?
Okay.
Honorable Somyo.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I think Lesa appreciates the report. Mainly on the areas of success and the emphasis on the area of capacitation of the actual personnel which handle these matters with their own sophistication. I really agree with them that some form of inbuilt capacity must somewhat be prioritized, because taking a case to court for the sake of taking that case to court is somewhat mounting towards just a popular stance. Might be a heightened response to pressure, not necessarily having looked into depth in as far as reaching the critical factor of successful prosecution. And successful prosecution had to rest on the fact that there is requisite capacity which has to take into consideration all matters that relate to such delicate aspects of a number of cases in as far as corruption is concerned. The depth of corruption needs that capacity. When we received a report, Chair, which was coming from the Fusion Center sometime last month, it made an indication that there are a number of cases which had went through that center, inclusive of those cases and the drivers of availing some information in as far as cases to be looked into was the Office of the Auditor General, which has had a massive information. I think in one of the reports, we're informed that about 80,000 of such instances are somewhat in the radar scale of the Fusion Center, in as far as the report of the Auditor General through that interaction which was taking place. And if that is the case, then the numbers which we have received now are looking very somewhat smaller than what we have received earlier on in terms of that report. Is it because there's been some kind of a filtering made, and maybe some of those areas are not necessarily falling within the category of such investigations? The third area, Chair, is the area that relates to what we have been vocal on, the referrals. You see, a number of instances, we are talking about the SIU's investigations, such referrals at times are made to the institutions to follow. They might relate into the disciplinary actions taken, not necessarily of a hard and fast a criminal matters, but they require some kind of preventative measures. I think the SIU has somewhat reported. So the necessity of the involvement of the Public Service Commission, which would relate into the handling of such matters, and therefore the absence of that institution becomes so loud in as far as the instances of tracking the success and failure of dealing with such matters, which would assist the public service generally on the preventative line in the measure of the strategy of dealing with matters of corruption and fraud, mismanagement, and so forth. I agree with the, I think was Advocate Badu was talking about the area that relates to the impact of cases, that they would ensure that the prosecutorial authority succeeds on. And it would as well be good from the reporting side of these number of cases, which I appreciate that we have received that kind of a breakdown, but less the quantum, the amounts involved, so that when you invest into a case, both in terms of time, in terms of energy, in terms of personnel, look into such financial related quantities, which would somewhat fall within the trail of following the required amounts. So the quantities ought to be somewhat specified around such report. But your investment of time, your investment of personnel, your investment of your resources should as well be talking into what is it that you are chasing, what sort of qualities you are chasing, what sort of sophistication that you are involved in. Lastly, I've looked into both the pie chart, the graphs which you have presented, and an outline of which state related departments are in the main visibly in the criminal line. We see the municipalities rank high, followed by the Department of Public Works, and then other entities would somewhat follow, and the end line is with SASA. Looking into the current trail of such matters, you'd find out that through the COVID-19 expenditure would have lent something in as far as the usage, the expenditure, the time versus the actual achievement, the quantities, the quality of such products, and lastly, the actual outcomes in as far as such investment on those matters are concerned. And it pains me when you would find out that when you look into the focal point at the municipal level, and you follow the actual discipline generally on the state departments, government departments, in as far as the both the management and accountability for the resources that are somewhat placed into the hands of the public service, how such outcomes are somewhat appreciated based on the level of achievement of development, which was somewhat designed to achieve. And the number of such cases as followed, the number of such cases as a success factor reflected, it looks like indeed there is a need for a singular powerful entity which ought to somewhat be handling all matters that relate to corruption. Because as we sit even here on the coordinating space, you would find out that the limit would be the lost nuts in as far as those institutions who would bend their hands, bend their energy and sweat to ensure that we succeed as a country to reach the required level of a observable, less criminal conduct in as far as these matters are concerned. So the call for a single entity, unit to fight crime and corruption in the main, it really becomes a necessity in the country. In agreeing with what you are putting on, yes, that drive, talking about something is not the same as doing it. So the level of speed for government and the country to see that entity is more than urgent, so that we can visibly see the stability in these various other units which are currently involved in such a kind of work. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right, are there any further questions, colleagues? All right, can I just, General, I would like, my questions will probably be somewhat administrative. How regularly is the ACTT meeting? I heard the Advocate Batshoi asking for guidance from SCOPA, which is fair enough and fine, which we will continuously do. But I wanted to gauge the your terms of reference. If again those can then be sent, and then we can our guidance along the lines of it to do. The, I'm gonna open the presentation here. General, on slide on slide 7, where you are speaking about the 223 cases which are currently before you, which of course is an increase from when you first reported to SCOPA in 2010, when you at the time had 189 cases. I would request, General, that a further breakdown of these cases in specifics be submitted to us, amongst other things, to ascertain the age analysis of these cases. How long have they been with the ACTT? So that we can see whether how the progress is going in so far as all these cases are concerned. The monetary values, of course, is what is of particular importance to us here in this community. How much are we dealing with here so far as these cases are concerned? So that we look at that as well. I've noted the issue around capacity, which of course keeps coming up every time we meet. Fair enough that it should. But we also want to draw your attention to the fact that with what you have, things can still be done. It may not be 100%, but strides in the right direction can be done. And then, of course, on the issue of the breakdown on slide 8 of the cases referred to, insofar as departments and entities involved, that the top 10 departments or entities, I would like that you break that down as well, insofar as the details of each case. But I think of urgency is on the issue of municipalities, because we are currently dealing with municipalities at this point. And particularly, the committee will be visiting KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. And so we would like to look into whether any of those municipalities are where we will be going, so that we can prioritize those and so that we do not duplicate our oversight, so that when we are there, we can be able to deal with some of the issues that may arise and out of that. But a breakdown of all of these will be important to look at. One is not surprised, of course, that public works will appear here, and the departments have cited, because they have been perennial headaches. It is, of course, concerning that the steps are not here, because we would have wanted to zoom into those 6 cases that are there, because they are as part of the ACCT. We would want to also gauge the progress on cases within the people doing the cleanup. And that is yourselves. General on slide number 14 is the cases referred to the Fusion Center and a breakdown of those cases in substantial detail. All the things, General, that need breakdowns will set a deadline for when those can be submitted, because unless that information is readily available now. So, and then of course, I just want to then gauge, General, the extent of the functionality of the ACTT, and I would like to hear from the head of institutions who are here, whom I pointed out earlier on, have demonstrated high-level cooperation with this committee at all material times and called upon to do so. And that is something we won't overlook, understanding that it's, of course, part of your mandate to account, but a trend seems to be prevailing in certain quarters to not want to cooperate. And I looked at that list that was read by the general, and I could already see some of our own serial offenders here. But be that as it may, if, General, we can get from you and your colleagues in the heads of institutions, the extent, rather, your own reading of the functionality of the ACTT, and whether you are satisfied with it, and what are the shortcomings, and so that the guidance which the NDPP speaks to can be structured, pointed, and focused, so that we don't fire into the dark and hoping to hit the target. I raise this because it remains our fundamental view as this committee that the functionality of the ACTT is of paramount importance. And I think I'm probably sounding like a broken record, particularly for the purposes of the sharing, of the pooling and sharing of resources, skills, knowledge, and expertise to maximize efficiency and to avoid duplication. And so that is why we are constantly pressing on this issue along the lines of a conveyor belt, which is smooth sailing and for the right hand to know what the left hand is doing. So we would want you to be very frank with us, General and NDPP and HOU, FIC, amongst others. Are you satisfied with the functionality and the cooperation of the relevant stakeholders of the ACTT, and so that we can deal with the rest? Can we, may we get responses, and then we will come back if there are any follow-ups, and then we will round up.
Chair.
All right, Honourable. Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, thanks. At least now I can grasp the gist of the matter. I want to add on your issue in terms of the functionality, whether or not these other agencies, are they attending only when there's issues or matters related to their area of functionality, including the completion of the report that you have compiled and presented to us in terms of its approval and tabling. Is it only a report that relates to agencies that are implicated? For example, if SARS is not does not have anything in relation of what is presented to us, will they not be part of formulation of the report and input into the report to be presented to whatever department in Parliament? So one would want to gauge that in terms of their attendance. It's dependent on the agenda at the particular point in time. So if they're not implicated, they're not forced to attend, and they won't be privy on the nitty-gritty of the committees until such time that the matter relates to them, they will find themselves attending the meeting. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
All right, General, we'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think that we shall deal with the four questions that have been raised. Starting with the first one that relates to the prioritization of matters. As it was indicated that there is also a perception that might play out that certain cases are being prioritized and others are not, selection of those. We make use of a criteria that has been designed to look at specific things that informs, among others, is that the case itself should constitute corruption, as there are other matters that are national priority offenses but do not have the element of corruption in them, which at times one have to be a distinction between corruption and fraud. If there is no element of corruption, that is one of the criteria that we look at. There are issues that talks to the monetary value. What is the value of the matters that we are looking at? And determination of other things such as the capacity of perpetrators or alleged perpetrators involved, whether they are in of government institutions, whether they are holding senior positions, or whether they are just administrators at the lowest level. There is also an indication of national interest, matters that are of national interest, as well as the conducting of age analysis that I think it has also been indicated, the period at which these things may have been happening. then all of these are assigned specific marks to determine as to whether a particular matter fit within the criteria to be listed as priority. Those that do not fit in are still handled at other forums. As said, it will be appreciated that some of the matters are not dealt with in the ACTT space, but they are handled maybe in the anti-corruption space of the DPCI. So we have got several of those matters. As it can be seen that on the list, we are talking about 220 something, whereas the matters that we are handling are much, much more than what we are having here. The example that has been pointed out of Steynhoff, that particular matter is not reflected here as part of those priorities, but it is among the top 10 priorities that we are dealing with elsewhere. So the role players such as the NPA, the DPCI, the AFU and others have got among this as part of the top 10. So the matter is receiving attention. It's just that the maturity stage is usually reached at different times. But rest assured that the matter is receiving attention, and then the auditors are hard at work to finalize whatever needed to be finalized. On the question of the matters that shall have been raised by the auditor general, those matters are being assessed to determine the matters that fulfill the requirements of being incorporated into the list at the fusion center. So that list is currently being analyzed, assessed, and it is indeed there are several matters that are maybe elevated to become part of criminal cases that need attention. So that matter is currently receiving attention at the fusion center by the stakeholders. And I think that the SIU will deal with the matters regarding the referrals inclusive of preventative measures. With regards to the questions of the Honorable Chairperson regarding the regularity of the meetings that we are holding, we hold these meetings on a monthly basis. And then during the period of COVID, there has been challenges trying to find the best mode of handling these meetings. They were affected a little during that period. But once we familiarize ourselves with the online meetings, it went back to the status of being held on a monthly basis. We do have the terms of reference which we shall make available to the Honorable Chairperson together with the attendant registers that the Honorable Chairperson have requested. And I think it also touches on the issue of this, whether the attendance of today reflect on the ordinary attendance at this meeting. Those attendance registers will reflect on what the situation is. We should be indicating that I think from 2018, there has been some challenges that we found that is plain in this space. The meetings were not regular. The attendance were not regular. We as the members of the ACTT identified this challenge, and we indeed reported ourselves to the JCPS DG that we have got a problem of attending this ACTT meeting. And I think from that moment, the attendance became satisfactory. We were attending. So, indeed there is that concern that is real of relapsing in some of the areas. While we understand that the DGs may be involved in more than one meeting, but the minutes themselves and the attendant register will reflect on this. Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, we shall provide the information regarding the age analysis, the breakdown on monetary values of the areas that the Honorable Chairperson have raised. We shall also provide the details of the municipality in a form of breakdown, as the Honorable Chairperson have requested. On the question of the functionality of the ACTT, whether we are satisfied with the functionality and the cooperation of parties that attend on this, I should be saying that from the DPCI point of view, as each participant will also indicate, I must be saying that the ACTT is not functioning at the level where we would like to see it to be functioning. We have identified those challenges and we are working on them to correct the areas that have not yet been corrected. But since we have started identifying those areas, a number of them have been corrected and are functioning well. But we have moved further with the review of the whole JCP as a structure, which I think that Advocate Batoi will elaborate on that one. Among them is the review of the ACTT itself. Advocate Mutibi, who is part of this meeting, is the chairing the subcommittee that is looking at the review of the ACTT, including its functioning. So we have identified those, Honorable Chairperson, we are working on them. The areas that are weak, we are on a daily basis continuously improving on them, but it is not where we would like to see it being. The cooperation within the ACTT member, as it shall have been indicated that as a point of departure, we all retain the mandate that we have from our respective organization. And in doing our work, we are bound to cooperate, and in the majority of areas, we are cooperating on that. In this regard, I think we always remind ourselves regarding the laws, specifically Section 17F, that obliges us to cooperate and collaborate in dealing with these matters of national priority offenses. So we found in several areas that there is cooperation. As I speak, I think yesterday we had a constructive meeting with the South African Revenue Service to work on some of the areas that still need to be enhanced. We had a meeting of the ACTT, some of the participants at the Fusion Center, to work on some of the challenges that we may have observed during the enhancement collaboration. So in general, there are several areas of that I may call pockets of excellence. There are indeed some of the areas that we still need to work on, which some of my colleagues will elaborate on. And Honorable Chairperson, I think that I will for now leave it there and allow my colleagues to come in and fill on some of the areas that I may not have touched on. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Right. Thanks, General. NDPP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, for your comments and your questions. The question that was raised originally by Honourable Somio is a very important one about prioritisation, because we are acutely aware that we can be accused of being selective and targeting people and being biased in our selection. And so we need to have objective criteria which will demonstrate, not simply because we say so, but because we have a process by which we prioritize. And so as the General mentioned, there are case prioritization criteria that were very carefully thought through and discussed and has been adopted by the ACTT, which will guide the decisions in terms of the prioritization of the cases. It is also a case where when you have, you know, it's the triage approach, when you have so much to deal with and so little resources, you have to put your resources where, you know, you are going to make impact, you are going to prioritize. So it's not just prioritization because of all the other reasons that I mentioned, but it's also because we just don't have the resources. And we have to be very targeted in the taking the right cases where it's a good investment in terms of our very limited resources. So that's also a factor that we take, but it's a very important issue and we're aware of it and we want to address it so that we can demonstrate that we have, you know, objectively assessed cases, and this is why we have selected certain cases. On the issue of Steinhoff, I must say I'm really shocked by what the Honourable Mervyn Dirks has said. If it is on record, we will certainly look at that, and I would want to have clarity about which meeting that was mentioned in, because the Hawks, as the General has said, from the Hawks and the NPI are working very, very closely on this extremely complex case. And from the first day that I took office, it has been on the agenda of a top priority matter. There has been no decision that this is not a priority case. And certainly, I would be surprised if any member of the NPA indicated that we do not want to prosecute in order to protect, I hope I have this right, monopoly capital. That I find quite outrageous, if that's what any member of the NPA said. This is a high priority matter.
Sorry for interrupting. The NPA in that meeting said they do not wish to prosecute. I raised the issue about monopoly capital. That's my comment. They did not raise the issue about monopoly, but they did say that they do not want to prosecute. Sorry to interrupt you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the comment. It clarifies it. So certainly, we need to look at, what the NPA said about it, because I would certainly never have said we do not want to prosecute. There is an issue about prosecuting the company Steinhoff and people like, you know, the directors. And so we need to look carefully about what exactly was said, because the issue of this is a top priority, it is on the top priority list, and it's getting it still needs a lot of resources, needs a lot of work, but it is certainly a priority matter. Then the issue of I think the other issue that was, you know, that was raised by one of the honourable members, I'm not sure which one it is. Apologies, I didn't make a note. It may have been Honourable Somio, but I'm not sure. Is about the costs, you know, and the skills that are needed. What kind of sophistication is needed? I think that's really important, because what we're doing in the ACTT under the coordination of Advocate Rabaji is we are doing exactly that. Is we're doing and trying to get an audit and an understanding of exactly what are the sophisticated skills that are needed, and how do we actually properly skill the various entities in the ACTG so that we have the right skills. So I think that's a really important issue that's raised, but the skills issue is being looked at very seriously, not just in terms of identifying the skills, but having a very comprehensive skills development so that we can try to, make sure that, we get to the point where we have the kind of sophistication that is needed. The issue of the question by the chair in terms of, the functionality of the ACTT and shortcomings, I think General Libya has, indicated that there are pockets of excellence, and it's true. I think there are pockets which you will see, things happening, which is a demonstration that there is some level of excellence in certain instances, but we are extremely far away from saying that we have reached the level of functionality and efficiency that we in the ACTT would like. The general mentioned a review that is taking place. The JCPS cluster had decided at a retreat that had recognized that there was a need to review and to look at the efficiency of the cluster and its subcommittees. And a review team was put together, which is being chaired, which I co-chair with Advocate Kanile. And the subcommittee, the work stream that's dealing with the ACTT is being chaired by Advocate Motibi. And so it is, we are certainly, there's a project, it's been run as a project. We're hoping to finalize it, early next year. But it's a very comprehensive, it's a lot of work to, to do in this, in terms of a full, a proper evaluation. Advocate Motibi and his team, we are certainly hoping will be able to, really look at, and when we deal with the recommendations, to really be able to point out the challenges with the functionality and the shortcomings that the ACTT has. And that is all of us. And how, some recommendations about how we could get to a point where the ACTT has the, what it needs, proper identification of what it needs, and how do we actually get to a point where we can get to a well-functioning ACTT. So the recommendations will certainly help us in that regard. So we look forward to that process. And I think Chair, that you also asked about functionality and cooperation. I think we are doing reasonably well in terms of cooperation. I think there is still work to be done. Cooperation is not just about saying we cooperate well, it's about demonstrating that we're working in a collaborative spirit and way with regard to the various projects that we have. And so I think that there's a need for improvements in that regard. And so we are working on it as principals, and I certainly hope that things will improve there. I think there's a commitment. Everybody is committed to want to do their best to try to make things work. But we have to make sure that in the process, we don't duplicate and that we actually collaborate with each other and deal with things in the most efficient way. And we're certainly working on that. So hopefully that will improve as well. And Chair, General Libya has dealt with all of, so if there's any questions that we have not dealt with, we stand ready to answer that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm NDPP. Advocate Motibi.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, I just want to deal with the matter that the question that General Libya referred to me in particular, the issue around the referrals. We also take the issue around the referrals very serious from the point of view of consequence management. And I'm referring particularly where Honorable Somio mentioned the the disciplinary processes. And this is where officials in state institutions are involved. Those referrals are obviously made based on the evidence that has been gathered, and the evidence is then referred to the accounting authorities or accounting officers, as the case may be. And we do expect that those accounting officers should take action and make sure that the responsible officials are held to account. We do follow up and make sure that those referrals are actioned and executed. We do have also referrals, at least from the SIU side, on the criminal side. On that one, we are seeing an improvement, and we do have a memorandum of understanding which we are signing off. And I think we have now realized that we really need to sign it as SIU, NPA, the DPCI and SAPS. Yesterday, General, I received a copy which was signed by DPCI. We'll sign it and then we'll take it to the NPA. But all I'm saying, Chair, is that as the three of us, including the SAPS, we've really observed that there is an improvement required, which will really improve on how matters are handled. And I'm satisfied that we are going to see improvement in that regard. On the civil litigation, those are really referrals to the High Court and referrals to the Special Tribunal, where we, if they emanate from SIU investigations, we do have end-to-end control of those. But of course, there are those aspects of the civil litigation process where we've got interactions with the asset forfeiture unit. And we continue to meet. We've met as late as last week. Our colleagues from SIU and FIU and AFU will continue to interact to make sure that there are no conflicts, there are no duplications, just so that the process is seamlessly cooperative, and then it can produce the results that we require. Yes, I was there in a meeting and the NDPP was there. We really now really starting to demonstrate that there's that observation of cooperating and working together. On the functionality of ACTT, I will not really add even much more from what the NDPP and the General Libya have said. Yes, there is a recognition on our side that the functionality requires improvement. So that improvement we are working on. And as my colleagues have said, I have been tasked to chair, as part of the overall JCPS restructuring, the overall is chaired, as NDPP has said, by himself and the FIC director. At the lower work streams, I am responsible for the ACTT restructuring. And of course, that's the part that now SCOPA is charged with for purposes of this meeting, so that we can continue to show that that improvement. I've got a team that I'm working with, and it reports back into the overall work of the restructuring. Of importance, and I think General and NDPP have touched on that, is to make sure that the restructuring focuses on the efficiencies that have been lacking and what is it that needs to be improved, including case referral, prioritization, investigation teams and the composition thereof, because we need multi-skilled teams, the capacity and the skills that are required. Of course, the monitoring, evaluation and reporting. I think if we can really incorporate those as part of the improvement areas, we are going to see an improvement on that. the issue around cooperation, without reiterating what my colleagues have said, yes, indeed, there are pockets of excellence, and we have seen those. In the presentation, we have said the arrests that are happening are a clear demonstration that some of those pockets of excellence are producing results. There's few other examples that we can make. If I make an example in the ESCOM space, I have seen a tremendous, excellent interaction between all of us, SIU, NPA, DPCI, and we have seen those arrests that came out in the ESCOM investigations. The other matters in other state-owned entities, we are working together to make sure that we continue to show those positive results. So, Chair, all we are saying is that I think the realization is that we need to really ensure that we up the game and continue to show these positive results so that we can make the impact that's required of us by the public, by SCOPA, and just the general impact that will make sure that we hold those responsible to account, of importance, recover the monies that have been lost. And Chair, if we do this on this collaborative nature and collaborative manner, we are bound to see positive results. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Advocate Kanyile.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, from my side, I must say from the FIC, our role is to share information with law enforcement agencies that are here, advise and cooperate with them. And I must reiterate what has been said, that we are improving on the side of collaboration. But the gaps that are still existing is that we say we are a task team, but the task team, the operational people, at the moment, they are not really in one place. They are not really dedicated to ACC team matters. They are dealing with these matters, but still have other assignments over and above these matters. So for the ACCT to be able to move, you need people with the right skills, you need the right expertise, people who are able to have access to each other's data sets, and people who will be able to move with speed and give you quality when it comes to these cases. You must be able to say when you have made an arrest, be confident that there will be a trial date and the trial will resume and you'll be getting a conviction. What is also important is, other than really bringing people, really focusing on those cases instead of dealing with everything, is to be able to clean up our case assessment, to say what criteria are we using to take cases to the ACCT. As you are asking for a case analysis and not case the names of cases, but just the age analysis, it will tell you that we've got old cases that are sitting there. So it is very important that we have few cases that are manageable, and we know that these are the cases that really belong to the ACCT. And as the colleagues are saying, we are working at reviewing the entire JCPS cluster and its committees, and the ACCT is one of them. But I think where there is also a gap is the issue of coordination that is structured. We are coordinating ourselves, but at the executive authority, it is not clear who exactly is responsible for the issues of corruption in the country. Remember, this is not the issue of just investigating and prosecuting. It is also an issue of international obligations that we are having, coming from the OECD, coming from UNICAP. And one of the areas where we've been failing for years as a country is issues of beneficial ownership. We don't have a register on beneficial ownership, which tells you when you are dealing with the tender, that the very three companies that are really interested in this tender are controlled by one person. So we don't have that information. We've got multiple registers, testing, social development, SARS, CIPC.
Hello?
development, social development in the NPOs, sitting with the master of the High Court. So you don't know who's behind trust, you don't know who's behind legal entities. And the obligations that we have as a country is to be able to show that when you are talking about corruption or prosecuting people who are involved in corruption, you don't only prosecute the individuals, but you also prosecute legal entities. So those are the obligations that we are having, and those are the issues that touches on transparency and would be able to make us move as a country. In other countries, there'll be an institution that is just responsible for coordination. In our country, we don't have that. So you don't know whether it's still this minister or it's not really clear. It's a lot of principals involved. So we need that certainty and that owner to really be able to guide us. But I think as we're talking now of things, can we look at having a single entity? Maybe that single entity will be able to have all those powers of dealing with coordination as well as international obligations that comes with these matters. But as the colleagues are saying, we're meeting daily. Yeah, the intentions are really good, and we're hoping that with the support really at this level, we'll be able to make a difference. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ngwane. Right, colleagues, are there any further questions?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair.
Yes. Now, Chair, remember my question was the attendance into meetings. Is it compulsory or is it per issue based in relation to the functionality of that agency? For example, if there's a meeting that is scheduled monthly, will SARS attend if there's a matter related to SARS, SAPS, Treasury, and so forth? Or is attendance compulsory? I did not get a response in that aspect. And in compilation of the reports are compiled based on what is the content and contained. And others, if the matter is not related to the area of their functionality, they're not obliged to contribute into the report. I'd like to get a sense. And the other aspect, which was a public outcry, Chair, in relation to the perceived biasness, which is not attested at this current juncture. I must state it's perceived. But there are some cases where a different terminology will be used and others will be plain corruption and settlements in the form of paying back the money, like in the issue of staying off. Others won't be given that a latitude. So I just want to get a sense and an understanding that general and standard practice, why would others who are seen to have committed a serious crimes, huge amount of money involved, and it's in the public interest, they will have an opportunity to pay the fine, and others will be termed as collusion, internal fraud, stuff like that. If I can just get a sense, Chair, of the standard and application in relation to these cases, especially when there's money involved defrauding the state.
Okay. General, if I may just take you very quickly to slide 17. In your concluding remarks, the collective requires key skills and processes are underway to secure additional capacity, and you list three areas there. Can we get an update on that as to what progress is being made in that regard? I think that the frankness in your responses about the functionality is probably at the heart of why we need to keep a particular focus on the ACCT to make sure that it actually arrives at the point where it will be able to inspire the necessary confidence. In general, to say that we do not want the ACCT to operate at an ad hoc basis, because that may see in itself creep in a laissez-faire attitude or a kind or a cherry picking scenario in terms of when and how people take it seriously as participants. And so I think, colleagues, we will have to make a determination that these meetings are compulsory when they are meeting. It's once per month. It's not as if they are being held in every day. And so really no excuse should suffice. And I'm certain that if the attitude of certain stakeholders is what we have seen this morning towards the parliamentary meeting, then how much difficulty would colleagues as counterparts or as principals have to each other insofar as basic courtesy to attend. So I think we need to elevate it to a structured level to say these meetings are compulsory. I think so we'll have to go back to our resolution and amplify it a little bit further, and so that it takes into consideration some of the issues that have been raised today. There are certain things which are not negotiable, and because of the principles that I've here have pointed out, the challenge of resources, and particularly during this time, requires us to press the reset button insofar as how we are spending and prioritizing, and to avoid duplication. And so this is whilst on one hand it's about maximizing the prospects of justice and successful prosecutions and recoveries, but also at the same time, on our part, this is about stretching the public purse optimally by saving costs as well and not duplicating resources. So it has to be understood from that perspective as well, that this is a responsible action step. And so this task team's functionality is very, very important. We cannot stress that enough. And I appreciate NDPP the commitment that you make to revisit the matters and utterances which are attributed to the NPA. And it's important that we dive home this point. The Steinhoff matter remains a serious indictment on the South African body politic at every material perspective, whether you look at it politically, socially, economically, or from a lens of law enforcement and justice. And so it has to receive the kind of attention which the NDPP has pointed out to, of it being a priority matter. Because it, if it does not, it will embolden other corruption to take place. And of course, this happened even at a multinational level. And so we want to see a concerted effort which pursues the Steinhoff matter to a logical legal conclusion, including but not limited to arrests and recoveries, particularly for the people who were directly affected by this kind of corruption. And it's something that must not fall away. And we as a committee here have prioritized it and will be cooperating with other committees as well, as we have done before. But the law enforcement agencies are in a better position to be able to pursue that matter on behalf of the people. This is a justice matter, and justice must seem to be done and must be done. The Steinhoff cabal cannot get away scot-free, because what that will do is entrench a perception that only public sector corruption receives attention. For us, all corruption requires attention. And the state does not do business with the state. It does business with the private sector on the extreme end and the tenderpreneurs in the middle. So all those areas where there is government transaction and government money, whether it's expenditure or investment, there has to be a concerted effort to ensure that people are brought to book. I cannot stress that enough, and I think that there is a fundamental appreciation, as I've listened to the NPPP, of this very serious matter, and that it will continue to receive the attention that it deserves. So I would like to hand over to you, General, for your concluding remarks with your team. And then I will just want to make one or two announcements about how we will proceed on some of the matters. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I had raised my hand early on. Before the chairman,
Babu Dirk.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, I just want to touch on the matter that was raised by Honorable Hatebe regarding the terminologies that are being used in corruption cases. You see, we as COPA, it really affects our work that we are doing when these terminologies are being used loosely. And it really affects us. And you know, sometimes you don't want to argue in these meetings, with you don't want to make these things personal, because it's not personal for us. You know, we are just doing our work and it should not be personal, you know. But there's some terminologies that we are very uncomfortable with. When we deal with, like, for example, in most all departments, but let me use ESCOM as an example. The CEO of ESCOM comes here 2 weeks ago, and we then question why certain cases get referred for criminal prosecution and why others don't. And it's so glaring what is going on. And then he raised with us that some corruption is done illegally, some is unlawfully. Yeah, that's the term he used, illegally and unlawfully. Trying to explain to us there's a difference between illegal and unlawful. Some things were unlawful, some were illegal. And I checked that with some attorneys, and basically it's the same thing. Now, you don't want to go in the meeting and argue about these things, because then it becomes like it's a personal thing, which is not personal. To come and tell us, no, this one was unlawful and this one was illegal. No, it's really insulting us. And then there's a video circulating on all over social media platforms where the Minister of Public Enterprise is responding to a question of mine, where he's stating that not all corruption cases are necessarily criminal. Now, that is what affects our work as COPA when such statements get made, and then we get accused of we are going for selective prosecution. So this is the difficulty that we're experiencing. But you don't really want to, a person don't really want to argue about it in a meeting with these colleagues of ours from these departments, because then it will seem like it's a personal thing, which is not a personal thing. But these are the challenges that we are facing when we have to do our work. And I think with Advocate Motibi was in a meeting where the ESCOM person told us that no, it's the CEO of ESCOM told us no, it's illegal and unlawful, which I have a serious problem with. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's hand over to the ACTT, and then we will call it a day.
I'm sorry, before General Labia concludes, if I may, I think my... Very quickly, just on one point, I just need clarity, because you did mention in your concluding remarks that we will come back to you about the NPA comments regarding the fact that Steinhoff was not a priority. I would like clarity, if I can, Chair, about the meeting during which that was said, so that we can access it and find the detail. Was it a previous SCOPA meeting, or I'm assuming it was a previous SCOPA meeting, but I just want clarity on that so that we can respond appropriately.
We will get the Honorable Dirks to liaise with the staff, and that transcript of that meeting will be provided to the NDPP as soon as it is available.
That is much appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
But I was, of course, saying that General and your colleagues will conclude. So if there's other issues you'd like to raise, Advocate, you are most welcome to do so.
No, thank you, Chair. That is all. Over to the General.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chair and honorable members, In conclusion, let me say that we have been joined by the SSR. They are in the meeting. We have also been joined by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Those that apologize is SARS, which they have just responded on that apology. Chairperson, we have noted the various comments that have been raised as well as the questions. On the question of whether it is compulsory to attend these meetings or a participant attend whenever there are issues relating to their various environment. I need to say that it is obligatory to attend all the meetings. So we don't exclude anyone on these monthly meetings. We also need to indicate that what we have identified in the past was that there is operational committee meeting that the very same participants of the ACTT participate. So when we sit on both as two. That is the operational committee meeting is guided by the Act, the Police Act, and then the ACTT is the directive emanating from the JCPS. So while in the operational committee, the law requires that we meet at least four times per year. In terms of the ACTT, we meet every month. So now we have decided that we meet every month to deal with the issues of the anti-corruption. With regards to the Steinhoff that need to be given priority, we have taken note of that and we are really going to be doing that. I also need to highlight that we have never relaxed. When one look at the content of the investigation that has already been put into that matter, there is more than 200 statements that have been deposited, and those might also be indicating the number of witnesses that we had to engage with to put together the investigation. But we have taken note of the guidance that comes from the committee. I think wherever the statutory requirements obligate some entities or companies to pay some fines and the like, it does not erase, it does not delete the criminal matter that we are pursuing. We shall still be pursuing criminal matters. So, Honorable Chairperson, we appreciate the guidance that has been given to us. We have noted the areas where we shall still be coming back to provide answers. But as usual, the guidance from the committee is appreciated. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I submit.
Thank you, Vice General. Are there any other further comments or concluding remarks by any of the principals present?
Just to say thank you, Chair, to yourself and honourable colleagues for the engagement. We appreciate it. We take accountability very seriously, and we look forward to constructive engagement and your further support as we move forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you much, NDPP. Right, going once, going twice, going thrice. All right, the advocate Kanyile says nothing, and thank you. All right, colleagues, thank you very much. Let us, General, I hear you indicating people are trickling in slowly. That remains fundamentally unacceptable. I think that that has to be succinctly placed on the table. The non-attendance of the stakeholders is totally unacceptable and inexcusable, and is something that should not happen again. It is one thing when we request you to appear before us individually for the purposes of your own mandates, functions, and responsibilities, but from time to time, we'd like to have the full collective here so that we have a sense of the teamwork. So now the point has to be stressed. We are constantly, without downplaying or complaining, that we are interacting with the same people, and that's not a problem. That the General Lebia, you are here, Advocate Mutibi, Advocate Matuwen today, Advocate Kanyile, amongst others. That's not a problem. but we want to talk to everyone so that the seriousness of this matter can be fully appreciated by all those that are relevant in this space. So this sort of trickling in kind of thing, in my view, is tantamount to, I mean, for lack of a better phrase, and without the risk of sounding like a broken record, a laissez-faire kind of thing, on one end. But the worst consideration would be to be just a simple undermining of Parliament and the principles insofar as the coordination of the ACTT are concerned. Either one of them are not favorable, nor are they desirable. And it does not bode well for the spirit of cooperation. And so it's totally unacceptable. And where the fact that people trickled in here at one point or other, as far as I'm concerned, is neither here nor there, because it speaks to a by the way kind of thing. And so I think, I'll leave that at that. General, if any of all the information that we required and you've pointed to, may we receive that by Monday, 12 o'clock. I understand it's a bit substantive because you have to drill down into each case. Monday will be favorable because we also want to tie down our work for the year. We are a bit pressed for time as well. Parliament will be going into recess soon, so we want to make sure we leave nothing hanging. And so hence the very tight deadlines that we are placing. And I do want to say that we don't downplay any of the pockets of excellence which you have spoken to, but those should be a norm and not an exception. And I think let us arrive at a point where this is a daily lived reality in the South African space, that there are consequences to every action of corruption, every act of corruption, that there are consequences, and that requires law enforcement agencies that are functional. We do not underestimate the challenge of resources that you have spoken to. We take that very seriously, and we continue to apply our minds to that, and I'm sure meet with the IMC, and we will continue to track on this matter and deal with it. But the absence of National Treasury, of course, does compound the problem, because if they're in the ACTT, they should have a better appreciation of the shortcomings of the ACTT because they are there. So if they are not there and not participating there, and they are not here, not participating here, why are we chasing after them? They are in the belly of the beast. The cooperation of National Treasury on this matter cannot be overlooked. I know that we are now having to spend resources and spend money to go after money. This is a costly exercise, but there's no other alternative. So National Treasury had better shape up. We are increasingly finding ourselves with the perennial headache of a National Treasury's cooperation, which is fast dwindling. And I think it's got to stop. It's got to stop. We can't be chasing after National Treasury. They are not going to define themselves outside the collective, nor are they an island. They are away from everybody else. No, they are part of the system, and they must fulfill their responsibilities and their participation wherever they are expected to be. We have gone on and on about resources today. And National Treasury is not here. I suppose maybe somewhere along the way they popped in. I don't know. But the issue of resources has to be answered. We discussed it with the IMC. It has to be discussed now. Because every cent lost, they have to go and find ways and means to replenish it in the fiscus. So this directly affects National Treasury as well. I certainly don't understand this kind of attitude on the part of National Treasury. But for what it's worth, it must be noted today that it's fast becoming a perennial headache, and personally, it's beginning to nauseate me, this kind of thing. We can't have the ACTT coming here complaining about resources when one of their key players is National Treasury. So I think at some point we're going to have to get clarity from National Treasury on how they are responding to this particular matter. Anyway, colleagues, I would like to thank you very much for today. And we will, so we'll receive that on Monday, look at the cases. We will go back to our resolution once we've received all that information and update it a little bit before we send it to the House, and then ensure that when it reaches the role players of the ACTT, it will be succinct pointed and actually address some of the issues that they want. And then we will take it from there. Colleagues, we will be meeting next week, amongst others. So the program will be updated. There are some few changes that have had to be made going from yesterday's Eastern Cape challenge. And I see my screen keeps popping up apologies. We are not taking those apologies. We are taking them as explanations. So, but yeah, it's fine. You can pop them in the thing. Okay. So colleagues, the Secretariat of the Committee will update you on next week, and all the preparatory documents will reach you by the end of the week. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much, and encourage the law enforcement agencies to continue on the trajectory of pursuing justice. The arrests we are seeing are good, but today, General Lebeya, please don't make another announcement about who will be arrested soon. The headaches I had last time, who is this person, who is that person? But it inspires confidence nonetheless when there are arrests. And then, of course, Advocate Patou, it falls to you and your team to go to court and represent us well and ensure that there are successful prosecutions. And we hope that you do that. The challenge of prosecutors that you had pointed to, the 700, we have to whittle that down. And as much as funding may have been made available, it's still a huge chunk. We will continue applying the necessary pressure on that regard. Colleagues, thank you very much. We will meet this afternoon for questions in the House for those that will be there. Be safe, and those who are participating in by-elections, and be safe as well. The meeting stands adjourned. Have a wonderful day further. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you.